Okay, so let's get started on the Netziv. The Netziv stands for Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. I guess more properly stated, as well. Naftali Tzvi Berlin, the known as Nazi the Yehuda Beis. Netziv was born in 1817 in Mir in Russia. He died in 1893. We'll talk about his later years in a little bit. His family, his parents, neither one came from a huge rabbinical family. His father was in Yaakov Berlin, was not a rav. His mother was a descendant of Meir Eisenstadt. Famous story that Netziv told about himself at a younger age. He actually told it at a later age in life, and Netziv was making a siyum or publishing a farm or something. And he said that when he was a younger boy, about 8 or so years old, he wasn't such a serious Talmud, I guess. He wasn't taking it too seriously, he wasn't focusing on his studies, he wasn't learning shtark, he was, you know, kind of wasting his time. And the story goes that the Netziv overheard a conversation, maybe he was eavesdropping, overheard a conversation between his mother and his father in the bedroom or who knows where, and his mother was saying, listen, Netziv Yehuda is not serious, he's not learning, let's take him out of yeshiva, let's take him out of cheder, let's find him a job. And his father said, no, you gotta continue with him, and maybe he'll turn down to learning, something will strike a chord. His mother said, he's not taking it seriously. His father said, you gotta, insist, hopefully he'll become a Talmid Chacham, we should continue, and yes, and no. His mother said, we can teach him an apprenticeship, or teach him to become a shoemaker, and he'll grow up, he'll have a nice career, he'll make a nice parnasa, he'll still daven, he'll still be a ben tari, just won't stay in yeshiva, and back and forth, until finally, his father was about to give in. His father said, fine, we'll take him out of cheder, we'll take him out of yeshiva, and teach him apprentice, teach him to become a shoemaker. And at the time, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda, again, who was eavesdropping, who, overheard the conversation from behind the door, ran in, and he sees his father, whether he was crying or he saw the brokenness in his face, he said, Abba, Tati, whatever he called him. He said, Dad, please give me one more chance. I'm going to sit and learn. I'm going to learn seriously. I'm going to be committed. I'm going to try my best. Supposedly, from that young age, really, and it turns around his life and really began to become a tremendously serious learner, a serious worker. We'll discuss his seriousness and commitment a little bit later on, but it really starts from a young age. And Netziv had two wives. His first wife was the daughter. First one died, and then the second one he married afterwards. The first one was the daughter of Yitzchak of Volozhin, the grandson of Rav Chaim Volozhin. Rav Chaim Volozhin had a son named Yitzchak Levitzel of Volozhin, and they had a daughter. That daughter was the Netziv's first wife. That daughter was the Netziv's first wife. They had a son, and their son's name was Rav Chaim, or Rav Chaim Berlin. Eventually, he moved out to Moscow. He became a Rav in Moscow, and he there's a yeshiva in Brooklyn that's named after him, Chaim Berlin. Rav Chaim Berlin eventually married the daughter of Rav Avraham Shapiro, also very Chashev Tam Chacham. The Netziv wife, the first wife, the daughter of Avitzela, was actually very disappointed in his learning, disappointed in his intelligence, his lack of intelligence, disappointed in his Torah comments, his Torah accomplishments. She was just disappointed. She really had expected to marry someone of great learning, great stature in learning, someone who's a real Chashev Tam Chacham. Again, she was from the Volozhin dynasty. She was very disappointed until Avitzela Volozhin, the Netziv's father-in-law, read his son-in-law's, the Netziv's, comments and his writings on the Sifri, and he was so impressed, so blown away, that eventually he was impressed with the Netziv. He recognized the Netziv's ability to learn and ability to put together good Chidushe Torah and ability to analyze the Sifri well and could handle on Sugis and on Torah. Eventually, he actually became the Rashiva of Volozhin. But in any event, the Netziv was certainly at a younger age not necessarily recognized for his tremendous intelligence, but his wit, but his quickness. But again, it was his hard work that allowed him to be successful. Again, we'll talk about it more. His second wife was the daughter of Yechiel Michal Epstein. Yechiel Michal Epstein was the author of the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan is actually a pun, written a commentary, I guess. Basically, it's a summary of Piskei Halacha. feed the same seder as the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch was the original major halachic work, and the Aruch HaShulch is the more modern one, has more modern shalos, sometimes it quotes other opinions, sometimes it has a little bit of more hashgafic or philosophical perspective. In any event, marry the daughter of the Aruch HaShulch, the daughter of the Chil Nechlevsky, who I guess also is the sister of the Torah Kamima, same family, and this daughter of the Chil Nechlevsky was actually the Netziv's niece. He married his own niece, and they had a son whose name was Meir, of Meir Berlin, who eventually, later on, made Aliyah and gave himself more of an Israeli name instead of Berlin. He became Bar Ilan, Rav Meir Bar Ilan, and obviously the university here in Renaissance Tel Aviv is named after him, and some of the road here in Yerushalayim. And many, all the Bar Ilan stuff that you've heard of is all named after the Netziv's son. Rav Chaim Berlin is a very chashuv Talmid Chacham, so is Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Rav Meir Bar Ilan actually helped start the Encyclopedia Talmudit, so it's that yellow series of encyclopedic works based upon sugya to sugya. You know, it goes from the Seder of the Aleph base, starting with Aleph going through Taf. I don't think it's up to Taf now, it's up to Kaf or Talamud or so, where they go through basically every single Gemara, Rishon, Achron, the Olera, tremendous bikias there, listing all the sugyas and all the shitas found in all the sugyas. In any event, the Meir Bar Ilan was very influential in the starting of that. Probably the most important thing to note about the Nativity is Rav Shiva Berlajin. Rav Shiva, probably the most prestigious yeshiva, I don't know, last 500 years, 1,000 years, maybe since the Chassidim, the Talmud, maybe even ever. It's a yeshiva located in Belarus, in Belarusia. He was a Rav Shiva there from 1854 to 1892, for 38 years. 38 years he was Rav Shiva there. He was also famous for closing the yeshiva in 1892. The standard reason given, if you look at most textbooks, I guess, or if you ask anyone, is because the Russian government was forcing the yeshiva to learn secular studies. All professors were supposed to be college educated, and there was no Torah between 9 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon. And to be honest with you, to run a yeshiva that's going to do something chachamim with such criteria, it's going to be almost impossible. And that's what the Netziv did. He closed the yeshiva. More recently, there's been some type of Russian documents, and there's been a little bit of a brouhaha, there's been some type of hackers talking, schmoozing. There's been potential historical documentation that supports it, that maybe part of the reason why the Netziv closed the yeshiva was not just to prevent the secular studies, the secular education that the Russian government would be enforcing, but additionally because he had concerns that his son, Rav Chaim Berlin, or any of his children, would not be taking over in the Soloveitchik, would be taking over the Belushan Yeshiva, the dynasty would go to the Soloveitchiks, and there was a little bit of politics, even though they kind of got along, they kind of did as well originally. The Netziv was Rosh Shiva, co-Rosh Shiva with the Beis Halevi, the Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, the Rav's great-grandfather. They didn't really get along, they went to Beis Din. At the end of the day, the Beis Halevi left the Belushan Yeshiva, and the Netziv kind of was Rosh Shiva without the Beis HaLevi. Later on, Rav Chaim came back, the Beis HaLevi's son came back, and they got along better. Again, different styles, and they differed on the issues, but they got along significantly better. If I'm not mistaken, Levitz and Meisen, the Soloveitchik's sister, I think, has in her memoirs, she calls it, a story, she tells a story that the Beis HaLevi, when his son Rav Chaim got married, he married the Netziv's granddaughter. I think the Netziv's granddaughter married Rav Chaim, and the Netziv wanted to dance with the Beis HaLevi at the wedding. I think the Beis HaLevi refused. I guess there was bad blood, definitely between the two of them earlier on. But the Netziv buried next to Rav Chaim, and I think Rav Chaim got along better. In any event, that's the terms of the Netziv and his role in the Belushan Yeshiva. In terms of his personality and hashkafa, etc., etc. So for starters, he was a big Zionist. Many attribute a lot of Cook's Zionism and Zionistic perspectives and hashkafa back to the Netziv. The Netziv was one of the biggest talmidim of the Netziv. The Netziv was the Rebbe, one of the most influential rebbeim of Rav Cook. I think Rav Schechter has written one of his books, Mitzvah Harav and Nefesh Harav. He tells the story that the cook wanted to wear tefillin all day long. You know, these days they don't wear tefillin anymore. These days we pick up a tefillin after Shachar, but The Salachon would think you shouldn't, and the cook wanted to, so he went to Chaim was not interested at all in allowing any Talmidim and Blush and Yeshiva to let's go on all day long. But the Netziv allowed for it, and the Netziv had a little bit of a different perspective on the issue, and in general, the cook listened to the Netziv at that particular time, and in general listened to the Netziv. You know, very close relationship. There are stories that the Netziv says the Lashon Yeshiva would have been opened only for a cook. Dayenu would have been, it'd been enough. A cook was such an Eman, such a master, it would have been worthwhile. But in general, Rav Kook definitely was more of a traditionalist. Rav Chaim at the time, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, was revolutionary in his learning, the Brisker and Brisker Lumdis and Chakiras, and conceptualizing, categorizing, classifying, more of a modern, progressive style of learning for sure at the time. And then Netziv was much more of a traditionalist, much more of one of the earlier Achronim, and Rav Kook basically adapts more of the Netziv style of learning, as well as the Hashkafa on many different levels. You know, the Netziv was the cook's major rebbe. I think I once heard a story from Rabbi Daniel Feldman, who relates that in the Merkaz Harav, the cook opened up a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael years later, called Merkaz Harav, it's one of the most prestigious yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael even today. So in there, one of the great-great-grandchildren of the Netziv was imitating one year on Purim, he was imitating the cook. I guess it was a Purim spiel, all the same stuff. Talking the way he talked, with the exact tone of voice, and the type of things he would say, all the things you need for an impersonation. Suppose your cook walked through the room, and I guess the boy imitating him, and his great-grandson, a great-great-grandson, whatever it was, and get embarrassed with him. You know, he was taken aback, and the cook said, no, it's fine, I appreciate it fully. I used to imitate your great-great-grandfather, I used to imitate the Netziv, kind of with a smile, and in a certain sense, the warmth of the family relationship, I guess, kind of was displayed. In any event, the Netziv, at the end of his life, moved to Warsaw. He was planning on moving to Eretz Yisrael, planning on making Aliyah, but he never actually made it. He had diabetes toward the end of his life, and then a stroke. He actually was brought to Warsaw because that's where the great medical attention, the best doctors in the time were, and Eastern Europe were in Warsaw, so he went to Warsaw, and he was buried in the Warsaw Cemetery. He's actually buried next to Chaim Soloveitchik there. And the rumor has it, I don't know if it's true, I didn't get a chance to look this up, but I once heard that the Kvarim switched. In other words, if you look under Rav Chaim's kever, you find the Netziv, and under the Netziv kever, you find Rav Chaim. I don't know if it's really true. But to me personally, that Ohel, that place, that those two Kvarim next to each other, was extremely strong, had an extremely strong impact on me. I feel extremely connected to them. I really feel my Masorah really goes right through that. I remember I was there twice. The first time I was there, with YU, we were running some type of Kira program out in Poland. And the second time I went to see the Talmidim was HaKotel. And I remember the second time it struck me even stronger. And I explained to the Talmidim why I was so moved, why I was so touched, why I was so emotionally overcome, overwhelmed. And I spoke about how essentially our Masorah dates, you know, stems or passes right through these two people right here. Certainly Rav Chaim Soloveitchik and his son Rav Moshe and his grandson the Rav. All of my Rebbeim are Talmidim of the Rav, or Talmidim of the Rav. You know, it's difficult to find educators in the non-Orthodox community who are not tremendously shaped, either directly or indirectly, by Rav Soloveitchik. And the Rav was definitely a continuation of his father's Masorah, Rav Moshe, and grandfather of Chaim. And in terms of learning, and in terms of openness, and in terms of sophistication, I definitely feel what I have I've gained from that specific chain of the Masorah. And in terms of Zionism, most of the people I was influenced were influenced by Tzvi Yehuda, who's a cook's son, and eventually came, I guess, goes through the Netziv as well. For me, I really felt there was a strong linkage and connection to Masorah, and these were my Rashi Yeshiva, even though I never went to Balazs, and these are my Rebbeim, or whatever it was. I thought that Netziv and Chaim, really, they were the ones who, I guess, paved the way, set the tone, blazed the trail for almost everything in Torah mitzvahs that I've gotten, I guess, comes from them. For me, it was a very emotional experience. In any event, we spoke about the Zionism. I guess worth noteworthy to point that he was part of the Chovav Eitz Zion, which is an organization set up by Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, for sure one of the Mevatrei Eitz Zion, one of the big Tzioni Gedolei Torah of a few generations ago. Although later in his life, he kind of distanced himself from that. I'm not sure fully the politics and how that worked. In addition to Zionism and passion for Eretz Yisrael, he was a very well-rounded thinker than Netziv. Again, not known for his quick thinking, but definitely well-rounded. His commentaries and Gemara and Sifra and other halachic and lumdish commentaries, as well as his stuff on Chumash, the Hanadavar. Sometimes you find Gedolim who are much more narrow in their commentaries. They only write on one area of Torah. He was much more broad. He was in his writings. He points out he's a traditionalist, not like a kind of an old style yeshivish thinker. In terms of his character, again, he was tremendously unique in his ability to work hard, his passion and love and commitment. Again, he was known for his diligence, less his intelligence. His wife would complain, as he mentioned earlier, and his first wife complained that she married someone who was weak in learning. And the story is told, although I've heard it told about many Gedol Yisrael, I've heard it told about the Nisib as well, as a boy opening up the Aron Kodesh and crying to Hashem about his passion for learning and care and wanting it. There are stories about, in general, and Nisib's tremendous kavanah during tefillah, and most specifically in Ava Rabu, Savinu, Ava Racham, and Hamrachim, Rachim Aleinu, Vesein, Vilidenu, Lahavinu, Lahaskil, Lishma, Lilmo, Lilamid, Lishma, Lilaskil, Lachem, Kodavay, Tamat, Arzachab, Yava. Nisib had a tremendous amount of kavanah asking for knowledge and understanding, able to appreciate Torah, to learn Torah, to know Torah, to grow in Torah. There's stories of the Nitziv staying awake late at night, you know, exhausted, mamish exhausted with his feet in a bucket of ice, this way he wouldn't fall asleep in the middle of a sugya. There are stories of the Nitziv staying up late at night, and so he'd come in and say, you know, Nafot, Yehudas, father-in-law, whoever would come and say, time to go to sleep, and he'd, you know, take off his shoes and take off one sock, and then all of a sudden he have a kash on the Tosfos. And he went back to the Tosfos and he sat there learning all night long until Mamish time to Vasik, and they walked in, they see him with one sock on, and they asked him, why are you wearing one sock? And he told him, I took off one sock, I just been working on this kasha for the last 12 hours. Tremendous discipline, tremendous willpower, tremendous devotion. These are a lot of the character traits that really summarize and capture a lot of the Nisib's personality. Again, his biggest contribution was probably being Rosh Shiva for the Lashon Yeshiva. And, you know, maybe even closing it, when they closed, a lot of the boys went to the Slovakia yeshiva and learned under, it's a little bit of a different style, more of a Musa yeshiva under the Alton Slovak, but beyond the Volozhin yeshiva, known for some of his farm, he wrote a sefer called the Hamik Darbu, which is a commentary on Chumash, very, very famous, well-known sefer. He writes not just on Pasuk to Pasuk, he writes Hagdamas to the Sefer, to summarize this farm, what's the Bereshit about, what's the Bamidbar about, etc., etc. You know, it's a commentary, both works on the Pshat as well as ideological ideas, Hashkafa. I guess similar to the Ramban. I was thinking similar to Ramban in the sense that he's both dealing with major Hashkafic topics, and major Hashkafic Yisodos that come out of the Emek Dover, as well as major Parshanut ones. In any event, he wrote a commentary called the Hamik Sheil, which is the commentary on the Shofas. He wrote a sefer called the Meshiv Darbu, which is Shailas and Shuvas, Halachic Shailas and Shuvas. He wrote a sefer called the, wrote a commentary on the Shir HaShirim. He wrote a commentary, a sefer called the Murome Sada, which literally means the heights of the field, which is essentially Perish on Shas. He wrote a sefer called the Imre Sheif, which is a commentary on the Haggadah. He wrote a sefer, a commentary on the Mechilta. He wrote a sefer called the Dover Ha'emek, which is a commentary on the Vivek Suvim. The Kadmas Hamek Sheila, which really was put out by his son of Chaim Berlin and was translated to English a little later on by Yochanan Greenstein. In any event, the Nitziv really had a tremendous influence in terms of his writing, in terms of the Lashon Yeshiva, in terms of his personality, in terms of Zionism, it was really one of the major gedolim. But again, the fact that he accomplished so much by hard work and diligence and commitment is just really mind-blowing and worthwhile to learn a real Musar Haskel from, you know, okay, I think it's stop here.